Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. In this morning, I would like to discuss about interfaith dialogue according to the teaching of the Holy Quran. There is a famous verse in Surah An-Nahl, which I'm sure you are all familiar with. This beautiful verse says, أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم ادعو إلى سبيل ربك بالحكمة والموعظة الحسنة وجادلهم بالتي هي أحسن إن ربك هو أعلم بمن ضل عن سبيله وهو أعلم بالمهتدين. سورة النحل verse 125. The translation goes in this way: Invite to the way of your Lord with wisdom and good advice, and dispute with them in a manner that is best. Indeed, your Lord knows best those who stray from his way, and he knows best those who are guided. I think this ayah is present the outline and charter of dialogue and invitation, the subject that we are concerned about. It talks about three steps in dialogue or in invitation at da'wah, or three ways of dialogue or in invitation, depend on the situation. In invitation, of course, our mission is to invite people to the way of Allah. Ud'u ila sabil rabbika. Allah orders his messenger to invite people toward his Lord, his Rabb. So this is the subject, this is the, let's say, goal of invitation, bringing people toward Lord Rabbul Alameen. But how and by which method? As I mentioned, the general outline of the method is mentioned in this verse. The first step is invitation with wisdom. Ud'u ila sabil rabbika bil hikmah. Wisdom is methodology for inviting toward what we call theoretical knowledge or al-hikmah al-nadhari. When we want to teach or preach our belief system, here we need to employ wisdom. Wisdom is a rational method, a logical method. If we want to convince people, we need logical argumentation, rational analysis. المنهج العقلي. In belief system, in i'tiqadat, preaching does not work. What is effective is rational method, which include both rational analysis and rational demonstration or proof. So through rational methodology, we invite people toward the truth, haqq. The second step is to invite people toward good, khair, which belongs to the area of practical reason or practical wisdom, al-hikmat al-amali, in ethics, in morality. Here in morality, we need another methodology, not logical argument, but good advice, al-mu'idhatul hasana. Al-mu'idhatul hasana means to present your ethical ideas in the best possible way. This term is translated by different translation of Quran in different ways. Of course, they have all the same meaning, but different words, each word had its own beauty and flavor. Al-Mu'idhatul Hasana is translated as good preaching, beautiful preaching, by another translator, goodly exhortation. Exhortation means nasihat. And fair exhortation. I checked four translations, each of them translated in a different way with the same meaning. So in practical issues, we invite people toward the, not truth, toward khair, toward good, by offering beautiful advice or goodly exhortation. Here we need to encourage people toward khair, toward good. The third step, which Quran mentions, is وَجَادِلْهُمْ بِالَّتِي هِيَ أَحْسَنْ. Dispute with them in a manner that is best. Jadal means argumentation, disputation. It also has different translation. One of them said, dispute with them in a manner that is best. Another translation, argue with them in a manner that is best. Reason with them. Have disputations. These are different words as equivalent for Jadala Ahsan. Jadala Ahsan is when you don't want to prove any of your item of your belief system, or you don't want to give moral advice. Rather, you need to answer people's questions or reject their counter argument. In other words, you need to give answer to their questions. Raf'e shubhe. You offer your idea, then people raise questions or bring counter argument. Here you want to remove their misunderstanding and correct them. Here is when you need to employ this method, the method of Jadal al-Ahsan. in the best possible way to come to dialogue with them, to have rational and moral and friendly and respectful argumentation with people who have different ideas and different opinions. Or when they criticize your position, now you want to defend your position, here you need Jadalul Ahsan. So Jadalul Ahsan is a kind of reaction, not your initial attempt for convincing others. Rather, it is your reaction to what people ask you or argue with you. And these are all that we need in our da'wah, in our religious propaganda, or in our religious dialogue. We need to convince others by bringing persuasive proof to prove our ideas, our belief systems. This is wisdom. We need to invite people toward good, toward khair, by giving good advice. This is al-mu'izzatul hasana. And we need to answer their questions and solve their problems. This is al-jadal al-ahsan. So if we learn these techniques, then we are successful in our dialogue and in our conversations with other peoples. So it has both rational element and ethical elements. You know, al-mu'idhatul hasana or al-jadalul ahsan, they all refer to respectful approach toward people, kindly talking with people in order to convince them, in order to attract their attention. So first we have to be rational. Never have any claim without supporting our claim with a solid and valid argument. People will not accept our claims. They listen to our reason, our proofs, our evidences that we bring to support our ideas. And this is not enough. Our conversation, our communication with people must be based on respecting moral principles and ethical conduct. So we should, if we have a rational claim, we should bring logical argument. If we have a textual or historical claim, we have to provide historical evidence and document in order to convince others. And we should be careful in our conversation not to, you know, insult others' ideas, others' belief systems, others' cultures. And we should employ words which do not have negative connotation, negative charge. You know, the Holy Quran teaches prophets how to talk to people. Quran is the best book for learning how to have dialogue. You know, God teaches his prophet how to talk to people. When God, for example, addresses Moses and his brother, that if you, when you met Pharaoh, Pharaon, وَقُولَ لَهُ قَوْلًا لَيِّنًا, even Pharaoh, speak to him in a soft manner. Some translators said, speak to him mildly, or speak to him in a gentle word. Why? لَعَلَّهُ يَتَذَكَّرُ أَوْ يَخْشَى. If you speak to Pharaoh in this way, there is a possibility that he, you know, think it is possible that you can have effect on him, so that he become aware of the truth and fears Allah. Or about our Prophet, again, we have several verses that Quran teaches to the Prophet how to talk to people, how to answer their questions. For example, the ayah says, Mushrikeen will ask you, Kayfa yuhyi al-izam wa hiya ramim, how your God, you know, give life to these bones while they are, you know, destroyed. How Prophet gives answer to this objection or criticism or questions. قُلْ يُحْيِيهَا الَّذِي أَنْشَأَهَا أَوَّلَ مَرَّةٍ. No, he doesn't answer emotionally, or he doesn't attack to the questioner. Just give logical answer to his question. قُلْ يُحْيِيهَا الَّذِي أَنْشَأَهَا أَوَّلَ مَرَّةٍ. The same person who created him at the beginning, he is able to create it again, to give life again. So here Prophet is facing with someone who denies the resurrection, life after death. Prophet gives, you know, logical, rational answer to his question. So the ethic of dialogue is very important by itself, and in being successful in our dialogue. In our dialogue, we should not be, you know, in rush. We must have patience. We should not expect that whatever we say, people accept or agree immediately. Give them time and chance to think about it. And do not expect, you know, fast positive reaction from your audience. We have to have the art of listening. You know, we should exercise to be a good listener of others. Dialogue is different from monologue, is different from giving lecture. You talk and you should listen to the other party who has his own words. You have to listen. You have to give him chance to criticize you and listen it. Our personality and ethical, you know, character has much more effect on others than what we say. You know, people look at our personality more than what they, you know, expect from our words. sometimes a good conduct has much more effect than a powerful and persuasive lecture. Of course, the main goal is to explain, to promote the truth. We are not allowed to employ any method just in order to please others. So we shouldn't change our ideas so that, you know, it please others. We shouldn't change our Islamic teachings in order that people, you know, may accept it. So we should say the truth as it is. But of course, we should not say all truth always. We should consider the environment, the audience. Sometimes we cannot say whatever is in fact true. So if we want to teach the truth, so the first prerequisite is to have the knowledge of the truth, the knowledge of deen. We have to have a deep knowledge of our religious teaching. With a superficial understanding of religion, we cannot be successful in our dialogue. We should have deep knowledge of our religious teachings, knowledge of the time, culture, and environment in which we are active. We should be al-alamu bil-zaman, in addition to being alamu al-din. For dialogue, being alam bil-zaman, knowing the time, knowing the time means knowing the ideas, cultures, and thoughts that are in time. And we should be expert in the subject and topic that we want to dialogue. Therefore, we cannot accept dialogue in any subject. We should be expert on that subject. Otherwise, you know, we have to say only some general words, superficial presentation of our religious belief, which does not have, you know, a deep effect on our audience. So dialogue is needs its expertise. You know, if we are not expert in the subject, we should not enter into a dialogue. In addition to our knowledge of our religion and the topic that we want to have dialogue, we need to have a deep knowledge of the other party. We need to have the knowledge of the religion of the other party. If we are going to have a dialogue with a Christian, we should be familiar with Christianity. If the topic of our dialogue is a philosophical topic, we have to be familiar with the philosophical school of our partner in our dialogue. So, knowledge of the subject, which include knowledge of your own religion, knowledge of the culture and thoughts of the time, knowledge of the religion and school of thought of the other party, These are all prerequisite in any successful dialogue. Otherwise, our dialogue will not have the fruit that we expect. And as I mentioned at the introduction, Quran distinguishes between dialogue and preaching. In preaching, you are the speaker, but in dialogue is between two parties, so is much more difficult than preaching. And dialogue is a very complicated activity which needs both, you know, knowledge and a skill of dialogue, like knowing the language of the other side, technical skills, you know, being able to benefit from technology in your presentation, and other skills that you need beside those ethical elements that I mentioned. So in dialogue, sometimes we have conversation with others about our common beliefs. For example, if we are talking to a Christian, sometimes we discuss about our commonalities in order to have a cooperation in, you know, solving world's problems. For example, talking about justice, about peace, about family, environmental, you know, crisis. These are common concerns. Or spirituality, which is important both for, you know, religious believers in other religion and for us. Sometimes we have dialogue on the purpose that to remove others' misunderstanding about Islam. You know, people have a lot of misunderstanding about Islamic teaching, especially in our time. Sometimes they make, you know, equivalent between Islam and terrorism, or they say that Islam is a religion of violence. Today I saw a news from a European politician who said Islam is the religion of violence, and we cannot have coexistence with Muslims because of their this element of violence. Or Muslims, for example, do not consider and respect women's right. So in these types of discussion or dialogue, we try to remove their misunderstandings by clarifying, by, you know, enlightening and offering the authentic Islamic teaching. And sometimes we have dialogue not to remove their misunderstandings, just present Islamic view in different, you know, subjects. For example, we talk about Islamic worldview, Islam's view on God, his attributes, about humanity, about spirituality, morality. So here our purpose is to introduce Islamic teaching in different areas in order to make people familiar with our way of looking at the world, the human life, spirituality and our religious beliefs in different areas of human life. So preaching and dialogue or presenting our ideas are different skills, different missions that we have, and in all these areas we need to prepare ourselves both in knowledge which are required and the skills and methodology in which ethics and morality is very important and effective in persuading others, in convincing others, and doing our responsibility and mission with regard to what Allah expect from us. I think this general outline is enough at this moment. I don't want to talk more about this general outline in dialogue. I invite you to have reflection on the ayah and verse that I recited at the beginning of this conversation, which teaches us, I think, the best methodology for dialogue. So I prefer to listen your comments and criticism and question if you have, to have more fruitful discussion in our meeting today. Go ahead, please.
Bismillah. Your definition and your elaboration on this ayah was perfect, and you get best use of the concepts in this ayah, as you said, the best invitation, the good manners, for example, patience, and etc. But there is a fact I want to have a criticize on, actually, if it is called criticize, is that the beginning of this ayah is ud'u. Ud'u is an invitation. An invitation is monologue. Is one person talking to masses of people or another person. So, but here we are here to talk about interfaith dialogue or religious dialogue, which is which is totally different. They have commonalities, they have common things, but they are totally different, because dialogue is a two-way discussion, listening and speaking, and it has its own characteristics and needs and requirements. For example, when you want to have a dialogue, you have to first believe in otherness and others. But in ud'u ila sabil rabbik, when you want to invite, your perception and something that is behind your intention is that you want to guide him to the right path. So using this verse for getting general rules of discussion is okay. But as a proof of interfaith dialogue or religious dialogue, it is not a good example.
Yeah, thank you. You know, in dialogue, we don't have to believe others' ideas. We have to believe others, which means that we have to recognize others. We have to respect others, but not necessarily believe whatever they believe. because what they believe sometimes is the opposite of what we believe.
I said believe in otherness.
Yes, okay. So, we respect others. Dialogue can be a way for invitation. You know, invitation has different methodology. One methodology is just to preach. The other methodology is to have dialogue with others, with, you know, following and respecting all elements that are necessary in dialogue. But the purpose can be to invite people toward the truth. Through this dialogue, the truth will be, you know, clarified. Dialogue can be enlightening. Therefore, it can fulfill our goal in da'wah. So da'wah has different method. Sometimes we make da'wah through monologue. Sometimes we can have da'wah indirectly. It is not a direct da'wah. It is a conversation and dialogue, but it can lead to enlightening others and at the end inviting others toward the truth. The goal of dialogue must be to reach to the truth. Just the methodology is different. The goal can be the same goal for da'wah, as I understand.
Excuse me. Thank you very much. Well, I think there is a point that why we're conducting interfaith dialogue to receive or to achieve what, and what are the purposes and goals of maintaining and holding such seminars, conferences under the title and cover of interfaith dialogue. Do we do it for its own sake? Are we going to look at interfaith dialogue as a ultimate purpose? Well, I think according to what you said already, it's not. It's a way. So, the question is, what if my purpose does not accord to the preconditions and preliminary requisites of the interfaith dialogue itself? Because in the previous session, the coordinator or the conductor, the professor of the session said that, okay, we have to believe in the otherness, which means that we have to believe that partly the other part is okay, is holding the truth. If we are believing in Daya, means both. Okay. So, but if I want to just focus on the purpose of dialogue, which means that, well, we believe that Ahlul Bayt, the school of thought, is merely true, or ultimately, let's say, true. So they have to come. Well, so, you know, they're not in accordance with each other. They're kind of paradoxical in literature. How should I, as a interlocutor and participant in this kind of, let's say, friendly courtship, how am I able to solve this paradox? Well, seemingly to me. Thank you.
Yes. You know, it does not mean that in dialogue we have to be, you know, a skepticist. We don't know what is the truth. We are waiting until our dialogue, you know, show us what is the truth. It is not a precondition for any dialogue. Of course, in dialogue, I learn from others. You know, I don't know everything. So my partner also knows something which can help me to better understand this topic of the dialogue. But there is no contradiction between this and what I said, that dialogue can lead to, you know, come to the same conclusion. You know, my partner come to the same conclusion that I expect. So there is a possibility to come to a new, you know, stage with this, you know, exchange of ideas. So at the same time, I can have this purpose to invite other toward the truth, but at the same time, I can learn from others to have a better understanding of, for example, the topic that we are talking about, for example, human right, you know. So coming to a better understanding does not mean that necessarily I accept what my partner says, but it can help me to have a better understanding. So a dialogue can have different purposes and fulfill different, you know, goals. One of them is, you know, function as a way for da'wah. It is not the only way. Maybe we both are going to solve a crisis in our society, which is common between us. So we have dialogue about how we can face, for example, with, you know, ethical crisis or family crisis. So yes, dialogue can have different goals and purpose.
Thank you. I want to refer to negative point of debate culture of Iranians. I think the most important part of the verse is Jadel hom bellati hiya ahsan, because in our debate culture, dialogue culture, Iranian debate culture, less listen less and speak more. And the differences make them angry soon. And many debates in TV that we watch, two parts are expert, have enough knowledge, but don't have patience. So by this way, they cannot attract audience people, and the debate will be boring for us. And before entering in international debates, I think we should be a good listener in our country, and in our family, and then in our country. And we show good character, then we can show the beauties of Islam. I think attractive people in morality and appearance can be successful in this way.
Yes, you are right, but this is not only restricted to Iranians. You know, maybe you are more familiar with Iranian, you know, cultures, but you can see it throughout the world. You know, it is not the case that, you know, others, you know, they have a good dialogue with respectful, you know.
Because we are representative of Iran,
yes.
Because of this, I said this point.
Yeah, what I am trying to say is that this is a universal phenomena. You know, everywhere you may face with this kind of, you know, approach to dialogue. It is not restricted to Iran. Of course, our duty is to educate ourselves to have a Quranic dialogue. You know, in Quran, we don't have, you know, in dialogue, we don't insult others. Quran says that you have to have dialogue in the best possible way. جَادِلْهُمْ بِالَّتِي هِيَ أَحْسَن, not Hasan, not in a good way, but in the best way, in the best possible way. So this must be, you know, the outline of our educational system in educating our generations in to teach them how to faith with other ideas and how to react with other, you know, ideas and others' positions and words. And Quran is the best teacher in this regard, you know, which all elements that we need in a successful argument are emphasized in Quran, both in its rational, scientific, ethical, and psychological, you know, elements that we need to employ in our dialogue. And one of the best way to know the Islamic way of dialogue is to study Quran with this, you know, intention, to see how prophets, you know, face with their those who are, you know, different from them, those who have different ideas. This is the best way to learn how to face with other beliefs, other ideas, from Quranic perspective.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Thank you very much for your beautiful presentation. I really enjoyed it, especially when you started with the Quran. It really brought a lot of light to our session. When you were talking about the first phrase of the verse that says, "Ud'u ila sabili rabbika bil hikmah," and then you define the word, the term hikmah, as rational method with wisdom, manhajul aqli. Something that occurred to me was that, well, we take wisdom as logic, and like the logic that is perceived after modernism, which shows that like what you, the result of your experience, like 1 + 1 = 2, this is like logic to us, right? I was just, when you were talking, I did a quick research about the term hikmah in the Quran, and like I found that maybe there's like a gap between the understanding that we have from the word hikmah and the term, like the meaning or the definition that is intended by the Quran. For example, in different verses, it says that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is the one who grants hikmah to whoever he wishes. It's not like a kind of random, general kind of knowledge that you go study in university and then you say, okay, now I am, you know, I'm equipped with hikmah. And then there's this very beautiful hadith that I came across that says that when a servant becomes mine and begins to perform extra acts of worship beyond what is wajib, like, I mean, the mustahab acts, then Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, and I make him mine. And the more he surrenders himself to me, the closer he comes to me, until I become the eyes which he, with which he sees, and I become the hand with which he grabs. And then the hadith continues. So what I understood, correct me if I'm wrong, is that this hikmah has to do with how much you practice what you're preaching. I mean, it's not like the common sense, like, okay, so in philosophy, this is like that. In kalam, it's not like mere logic, the way we understand it at this age. Hikmah means that, because several times you and other respected lecturers pointed to the fact that if you want to be a good preacher, you have to present like real Islam within your behavior. Like, you know, the best way of preaching would be بِغَيْرِ أَلْسِنَتِكُمْ, right? And so this hikmah and this preaching, this dialogue will have its effect only if you're a true believer and you act upon, you know, it's like you have iman and amal as-salih, like everything has to go hand in hand. So like oftentimes we are ignoring the fact, like we're bringing everything to the level of materialism, like logic, you know, like 1 + 1 = 2, but like there is a deeper layer, like the spiritual impact. If we want to be you know, successful in our dialogues, we have to be really good Muslims. So it has to start with ourselves.
Yes, of course, what you said is true, but you know, words meaning become different in different contexts. You know, for example, in Surah Al-Luqman, Luqman gives advice to his son. And Quran says, "Inna atayna Luqman al-hikmah." Hikmah in that concept, that context, is advice. And what is here? Al-Mu'idhatul Hasana. So Al-Mu'idhatul Hasana in this ayah is the same as Al-Hikmah fi Surah Al-Luqman. Then Hikmah here should be different from Mu'idhatul Hasana, in order not Quran, you know, to repeat itself. If we want to have three element. So in this context, Hikmah is solid knowledge or valid knowledge. Al-Ma'rifatul Haqq, truth. Yes, truth sometimes can be proved through, you know, mathematical method. 1 + 1 = 2. And sometimes it depends on the context and subject. The way that you prove is different. For example, if you want to prove the authenticity of prophethood of the last prophet, so here you need different types of evidences. So the evidence is a way toward solid knowledge.
But Dr. Fanai, why is it the case that it says walaqat atayna, we have given them? It's not something that you go after it.
Yeah.
It's like a God-given gift. How do you explain that?
Yes. There is no contradiction between our, you know, attempt and God's, you know, grace. Whatever we have is God's grace. Even those cases that we work hard and we come to a conclusion, this is what God gives us. You know, God's grace depends on my preparation, my activity. For example, in the famous hadith that says, من أخلص لله أربعين صباحا جرى الله ينابي الحكمة من قلبه إلى لسانه.
Exactly, you're proving the point that I made.
And prove my claim, you know. من أخلص لله. You have this effort, you servant, you abd. You do your job, then God gives you the wisdom.
What is the job? Purity of
purification.
That's the whole point.
Yes, and sometimes, and part of your duty is to try to acquire the truth by thinking. You know, Quran repeatedly encourages us to think. Ta'aqqul, tadabbur. This is part of our obligation. So when we make our job in searching the truth, in seeking the truth, then we should expect that God, you know, give us the what we are seeking. So God gives us ultimately the truth, but we have to do our effort in seeking the truth. Mm-hmm. Part of the seeking the truth is to have, you know, this rational and logical activity, thinking. Tadabbur, and Quran praises ulul albab, you know, people who
contemplate
deeply. So what God gives us is the reward of our attempt.
Definitely.
So they both, we need both, you know. We shouldn't wait just for God's grace without doing anything. What I'm trying to say is that we should seek hikmah. We should try to achieve hikmah through God's grace. So we have to do our part, and God will do His what is, you know, belong to Him.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So I did not restrict the meaning of hikmah. I said here, if you want to have three separate elements, in this way we can distinguish between these three elements. You know, The first is to convince people rationally, then invite them toward the truth by giving good advice. And the third is to have dialogue with them, to answer their questions, to listen their criticism. This is, in this way of interpretation, this ayah can be relevant to the question of dialogue, what is subject for our, you know, discussion here.
Can I ask a question? Sure. Thank you very much for your good points. My question is about the one of the most famous verses which refers to the interfaith dialogue in Quran. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم قل يا أهل الكتاب تعالوا إلى كلمة سواء بيننا وبينكم. This is one of the most important verse about the interfaith dialogue. And exactly after this verse, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala invite the Christians or Ahlul Kitab, this follower of the book, to the challenge. And he says, Ya Ahlul Kitab, lima tuhajjuna fi Ibrahim? Wama unzilat al-Tawrat wal-Injil. And exactly in next time again, he has said that at the end of the third verse, he said that فَلِمَ تُحَاجُّونَ فِي مَا لَيْسَ لَكُمْ بِهِ عِلْمٌ وَاللَّهُ يَعْلَمُ وَأَنْتُمْ لَا تَعْلَمُونَ. What is your point of view about these three verses? If we actually emphasize on the first verse that invite follower of the books to the unity of God, and this gives us the method for interfaith dialogue, what about these two other verses? Thank you very much.
Yes. When we talk about dialogue, we do not mean that we shouldn't do anything else just to have dialogue. Dialogue is one of the job that we can do and which is good to do. But our responsibility is not limited just having dialogue. One of the way to, you know, approach other religions, other schools of thought is criticism, naqd, naqadi, you know, that you make in your books, your articles, your lectures. You can have criticism. This is another thing. This is different from dialogue, you know. For example, we criticize, you know, Hindu mysticism. So these are different tasks. None of them is enough. Dialogue, yes, is between two persons. You talk and listen. But when you are at the state of criticism, say, then here you can say whatever objection or criticism that you have. Of course, your criticism, in your criticism also you have to follow the rational method and respect moral and ethical, you know, teachings. Yes, we can have criticism too beside dialogue.
Step by step, yeah. Can you just have you
In different situations, you know, in different context, we can have both, not necessarily in the same context. So when you are when you have dialogue, then you may not criticize the others because the purpose of dialogue is different.
You're welcome. Excuse me. Sorry. Can anyone attend interfaith dialogue believing that I'm just true?
You know, sometimes there is a difference between I am the truth, or whatever I believe is true, and what is revealed to Prophet, to the last Prophet, is true.
It's the second one. Sorry.
Yes, sometimes I may be wrong. I may misunderstand my own religion. So I am not always true. But if I believe in authenticity of the revelation, so yes, I am sure that what my religion teaches is true. But it doesn't mean that whatever I understand from my religion is true. And sometimes in dialogue, I may recognize that my understanding was wrong. You know, others can help me to better understand my own religion. So dialogue can be useful at the same time that I believe that my religion is true. It can be useful for me, not for only for the other party.
Dr. Fan, I raised this question last session as well. Sometimes we think what we think is true.
Yeah.
That's the problem. Like the changes of ahkam, the people of the book were at one stage, they were considered as impure, and then they became pure, and like for example, with regards to women's rights, with regards to inheritance, a lot of people are like raising the issue, like, what, now that the society has changed, there should be like equal inheritance for men and women, and like people are coming to new understandings of religion, and that like makes you like skeptical about like what you think is true. So you, I mean, it's like a little bit tricky.
Yes, you know, we should not think that, none of us should think that I am Islam. I am not Islam. So my understanding of Islam sometimes is wrong. So I should try always to correct myself. We should have self-criticism, self-education. We have, in our life, we should try to learn but to correct ourselves. So we should not have, you know, prejudice about our own understanding. We should be open in this regard. You know, you have to be a committed Muslim and at the same time open to others' criticism in order to correct your own understanding. So in any dialogue or any presentation of Islam, we must be humble and we should think and say that this is what I understood, you know, up to this point. I may be wrong. Other people can help me to correct my understanding. So for example, in a dialogue, if I recognize that what I am saying is not, you know, correct, so I should have this, you know, braveness to say my understanding is not correct. I recognize that this interpretation is not true. So we can be humble. We can have self-criticism while we have the mission to, you know, defend Islamic teaching and Islamic thought. We can combine with, we should combine these two. Yes, you know, in Islamic teaching we have a lot of verses and ayahs that coming to hikmah is not only through learning and doing, you know, academic, you know, activity. This is one prerequisite. Quran says, ذَلِكَ الْكِتَابُ لَا رَيْبَ فِيهِ هُدًى لِلْمُتَّقِينَ, which means that taqwa plays role in coming to guidance, in coming to truth. الَّذِينَ جَاهَدُوا فِينَا لَنَهْدِيَنَّهُمْ سُبُلَنَا. You know, jihad, self-struggle, is a precondition for guidance. الْعِلْمُ نُورٌ يَقْذِفُهُ اللَّهُ فِي قَلْبِ مَنْ يَشَى. You know, knowledge is not something that you can acquire just by reading and studying. You have to read, you have to study, you have to reflect, think. But you should know that you have to purify your heart in order to receive the genuine and authentic, you know, insight and wisdom. And many verses in the Quran, it talks about Quran itself. لا يمسه إلا المتحرون. Its apparent meaning is that if you are not pure, you cannot touch, you know, the surface of Quran or the words of Quran. But its inner meaning is that if you do not have purification of heart, you cannot touch the real essence of Quran, and you cannot take the core and substance and inner meaning of the Quran. So yes, this is the difference between spiritual knowledge and, you know, the ordinary knowledge. If you want to be a mathematician, you don't need to have purification of heart. You just need to have a smart, you know, mind. But if you want to be, to know God, to have salvation, to have guidance, hidayah, to come to falah and rastgari, this is not possible just by studying and reading and following what in epistemology they say discursive knowledge. Beside discursive knowledge, beside, you know, ilmul husuli, you need to have a pure heart in order to be able to see the truth. Aynul yaqeen. You know, we have ilm al-yaqeen, to know the truth. Knowing the truth is possible just by reading and studying and thinking. But ayn al-yaqeen, which means to see the truth. Amir al-Mu'minin said, lam a'bud rabban lam arah. He doesn't say, I don't worship a God that I don't have a logical argument for its existence. He says, I don't worship the Lord that I haven't seen. So this is Aynul Yaqeen. And beyond the Aynul Yaqeen is Haqqul Yaqeen. To become united with the truth. To become one with the truth. Which there is no way for skepticism and ignorance. And this level of knowledge, Aynul Yaqeen and Ilmul Yaqeen, depends on our personality, the purification of heart. It doesn't come just by studying, reading, and academic, you know, job. All right.
Excuse me, Professor. I still think like I didn't get my answer, and with all due respect, and with all I know about you, that you're so knowledgeable, that you're higher than my professors even. I cannot be counted as one of your students, but I'm here to find my answer. Maybe other colleagues, other fellow talibe, other thinkers can help. You know, to my view of thinking, today the interfaith dialogue or religious dialogue is a technical term that, with your definitions, I think you're walking on the borderline, and you do not enter the room. You're just on the doorway, and I don't know why you don't want to interfere the exact discussion. What I'm looking for is a fiqhi and philosophical issue that we, when we are entering an interfaith dialogue, we do not think about we are right or our prophet is right. We don't deny it, but we don't think about it, because we are thinking about I have an idea, I have an ideology based on the revelation and on the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam, and Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa ajil faraj. And there is another person, maybe from an atheist church, maybe from another denomination, maybe from another religion. He is sitting in front of me. Should I, let me tell you like this, am I allowed to be in front of him, talking to him? Is this allowed in our fiqh to believe that, okay, he has his own idea and I have my own idea and we have to get introduced to each other? I'm talking about this fact. For example, I said in the previous session with the brothers, there is a verse, وَقُلْ يَا أَهْلَ الْكِتَابِ تَعَالَوْا إِلَىٰ كَلِمَةٍ سَوَاءٍ بَيْنَنَا وَبَيْنَكُمْ. This is one of the most important proofs of the religious dialogue. But many of the scholars believe that this is what we call in Usul Amma Majmu'i, and which means that we are only allowed to discuss a person who believes in unity, believes in Tawheed, and believes in other concepts, not in one religion, but at least we have to have these basic commonalities to start the conversation. But interfaith dialogue is a broad term. Also, cultural dialogue, intercultural dialogue is broader meaning. Are we allowed to enter such a discussions? The answer might be yes, we are allowed. But with what basis? With what fiqhi and philosophical basis we are allowed? We want to prove this idea even inside our Muslim society, because we have criticizes and critics saying that you're not allowed to discuss. This is what I'm asking. Yes.
Now we are in a dialogue among ourselves here in this session. One of the principles of dialogue is not to insist to convince others.
Sure.
You know, I am here just to present what I think. I'm not insisting that you have to accept whatever I am saying. So you can have your own understanding, you can criticize what I said, and I respect, and I am waiting to hear from you and your comments. So this is the first point. So my job is not to convince you. My job is to present what I think and listen to you and learn from you. The other point is that, yes, you know, we can have our own definition of dialogue. There is no one single definition for dialogue. Why should we listen and follow just one definition of dialogue? There are different definitions for dialogue. We can have our own definition too. This is the second. The third one, are we allowed to discuss, for example, to have dialogue with an atheist? Yes, we are allowed, because our Prophet had such a dialogue with atheists. Our Imams had dialogue with atheists. And the Quran, the verse that I mentioned, God teaches the Prophet how to discuss with someone who denied the resurrection. So these are evidences that we can have dialogue with anyone. The basis, what is the commonality? Our humanity is our commonalities, you know. Even with atheists, we have a lot of commonalities. For example, we have sensory perceptions. We both believe in our sensory perceptions. We both can believe in some, you know, self-evident truth. We both can believe in logic. And we can, because we are human, we can start from our commonalities and argue and discuss, have dialogue. Of course, not always our dialogue is successful, but the success is not our job. Our job is to do what we can do. What we can do and what we should do is to present our beliefs in the best possible way. Whether others accept or not, this is not our job. This is, in fact, this ayah has reference to this point, you know. At the end of ayah, Quran says, ادعو الى سبيل ربك بالحكمه والموعظه الحسنه وجادلهم بالتي هي احسن ان ربك هو اعلم بمن ضل عن سبيله وهو اعلم بالمهتدين. Which means that your job is not necessarily to guide people. Your job is to do what you can do. God knows who will be guided at the end. And this is not your job. He knows best those who are guided. Your Lord knows best those who stray from his way, which means that we can't judge others based on what they say, because the real belief is in their heart, and God is aware of what is in their heart, and we don't know the end of none of us. Maybe he will be guided at the end, and I'm not guided at the end of my life. Huwa a'lamu bil muhtadin. So we shouldn't make judgment about people. What is our duty is to present what we think in the best possible way which is possible for us. Yes.
About the part of the Jalal Ahsan, you said that we should defend our position, and we should, in religious dialogue, we need to convince others and prove our ideas. When we talk about the Quran verses, that is all the truth. What on it, and the verses of Quran are defendable.
We should prove our idea, but we should not force others to accept our ideas. We should not repeat in dialogue. You know, when you mention, when you made your point, you did your job, don't insist. This is the meaning of defense. Defense means you brought logical argument. You rejected his or her argument. That's enough. We shouldn't impose our ideas or insist others to accept what we say. We should try to enlighten others. That's it. Otherwise, it has, you know, the opposite effect, you know. So I think there is no more comment. Thank you for your listening and contribution.